Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Hot stuff.
Welcome once again to the Fansmanship.com podcast. Owen Main here today, and we have a special guest in studio, which is saying something, Chris Giovanetti from Cal Poly. Chris, how's it going?
Good, Owen. Good evening. I wouldn't say special, but see how it goes in the next 20 minutes or so.
Not as special as we think. I think you're a pretty special guy. What's your title at Cal Poly, just so people who are listening can know?
Assistant Athletic Media Relations Director.
Assistant Athletic Media Relations Director. Great. And you can just talk right into that mic. Get all up into that thing. That's what my friend Miles, he's a rapper, recording artist, and he does some of the songs and music for our background,
right,
and our intros and outros. And he said, "You got to get real close to the mic. That's the trick." So anyway, so welcome. We have Chris here today to talk a little bit of Cal Poly sports. He is the media relations guy for
soccer. I take care men's of soccer. Men's soccer, men's basketball, softball, and women's tennis.
So four.
Four.
Yeah. And when's women's tennis?
Primarily in the spring. They do a couple fall tournaments as well, but the focus is primarily through January and April.
Got it. So you'll have softball and tennis mostly at the same time.
Yeah. Once basketball wraps up around March, we'll get rolling with those and finish up the year.
Great. Great. Well, let's get right into it. Chris has been at Cal Poly for 6 years now?
6 years. I think awesome. This is year number seven, technically. Got there in fall of 06.
Fall of 06. And where did you come to San Luis Obispo from?
The long road. Went to San Jose State, graduated in 04, interned at Cal for a year. Went to Menlo College, who Cal Poly's playing tomorrow night in basketball. Yeah, NAIA school up on the peninsula south of San Francisco. And then positioned to open up in summer of 06. I was actually traveling in Europe. I was on a farm in Sweden when I got the notice from a friend that I knew at Cal who had worked with one of the guys in the office at the Tribune way back in the day. So he hit me up and I said, well, I'm not going to be in the country for a couple more weeks, but when I get back, I'll definitely take a look at it.
That's a great story. So you were working at Menlo College?
Yes. Okay. I was at Menlo College and
doing sports information stuff there too?
Okay. Same idea.
Okay. And so you worked at Cal before that a little bit?
Yeah, that was my first position out of college.
Out of college. And you went to school at San Jose State?
Yes.
So you were kind of all up in the East Bay, the Northeast
Bay. Area guy my entire life. Grew up outside of Sacramento.
You actually grew up in the same place that Luke's wife is from in Fairfield.
That's right. We were talking about that.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, his mother-in-law is an optometrist. She's actually worked in my eyes before, so small world.
There you go. There you go. I actually just drove through Fairfield, I think, on Monday.
A lot of people driving through. I'm the only one stopping.
What is that, the 80?
I-80, yeah. I-80. Halfway between San Francisco and Sacramento.
And so I'm from, I guess this is the Southern California, Northern California thing. I say the 80.
Yeah.
but people from north of San Luis Obispo, I think, it's I-80 or I blah,
it's
blah, blah.
It's I-80 because everything is either 680, 780, 880, I-80 is the main artery, but everything kind of branches off there.
But so nothing's not, the.
Nothing's the.
Yeah.
Simply the. But yeah, everything branches off the 80. So I think people get confused when they're driving through the Bay Area where the cutoffs are.
When I was in college, I could always tell where people were from because they would say the or not the.
That's kind of like
the five or not the five. What's the highway out there called? It's the five. Okay, well then you're from Southern California.
It's like the Rand McNally version of Hella, right?
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know exactly where they're from.
Precisely. Absolutely. So you've been at Cal Poly for 6 years and you've been the guy for basketball, for men's basketball.
Men's basketball last,
for the last 3 years.
So
Joe Calero's second year was
yes.
Your first year. What were your initial impressions of San Luis 6 years ago when you came here? Did you know a lot about San Luis? Had you been down here a lot before? I always ask coaches this who come. I asked Sam Crossan this when I talked to him. You know, what do you know about San Luis? Again, it's a place that a lot of people in the college circuit kind of drive through if they're going to Santa Barbara or drive through if they're going up to San Jose.
Well, I think a lot of people just know about it as a vacation destination. We'll travel with Cal Poly teams back east in the Midwest and people say, oh, San Luis Obispo. Well, the one thing they always say is, oh, it's that one, what's that one hotel there? What's that one weird hotel? I'll say the Madonna Inn. They'll go, that's it. I saw it on a special. somewhere, but I think a lot of people primarily know about it as a vacation destination.
Right, right.
And before, I'd pretty much just driven through it and never really thought about it.
Never really stopped.
No, a couple times here and there. I played rugby in college. We had a tournament in Santa Barbara one time, so we stopped briefly. But it's hard not to like it once you've been down here for an extended period of time.
A rugby player, huh?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have picked you for a rugby guy.
What would you have pegged me for?
I don't know. Basketball? I mean, you're tall.
That's not a good sign for people to say you played rugby.
Were you a scrum half?
I was a lock.
A lock?
Probably the least desirable position to be on the field. Yeah.
Right in the middle, right?
And instead of the scrum, 4 and 5.
Yeah.
The only way I could start was to play the least desirable, least likely to score position, but it got me on the field.
Yeah, I have a real good friend who played rugby at UC San Diego.
Okay.
And I used to go to some of those games, and it gets crazy out
it's
there.
It's fun, yeah.
Yeah. It gets intense. I considered it when I was kind of jonesing for that kind of post high school. You're missing high school football, but you're not. You know, you're
I want to be active, sure. Knock heads a little bit, but I can't commit to football.
Right. Yeah. Or you know, my school doesn't have a football team, or I'm not good enough to keep playing football. What does that look like later on? Mm-hmm. And rugby seems to be like something that a lot of guys go to.
Yeah, that's probably I would say maybe not the number one issue with American rugby is a lot of guys don't take it up till they're like 18.
Right.
Now it's kind of changing now. We're getting more youth programs in the United States, touch rugby for little kids. But for a long time, it was nobody really picked it up till they were 18, 19. And the U.S. has been way behind most other countries in that respect.
Do you pay a lot of attention to Cal Poly rugby?
I used to do some work with them. Yeah. Just the schedule doesn't really permit.
Got it. Yeah. Peter Madonna, I think, is an assistant coach there.
Yeah.
He's a good friend of mine. I went to elementary.
Yeah. I met him a couple times.
Yeah. Pete. And, I think I played golf with the Australian, they have an Australian coach, right?
I'm
head coach. Maybe the last year or two.
Yes. They got a new guy. I worked a little bit with a previous guy. Right. But the new guy's name, the new coach's name, his name escapes me.
As it escapes me as well. But I think I played golf with him one time with Pete. So there you go. I'm a big rugby fan as well. You're also a big soccer fan, I gather, at least from things that
hard.
You post sometimes. Are you a soccer fan?
Yeah, I'm a massive soccer fan. Right. I'd probably say soccer number one, rugby number two, as far as my favorite sports.
Personal favorite sports. Wow. And so how did you become a soccer fan? I always feel like people in the United States kind of have a...
Everybody's a story about how they became or they came
fan.
Across it. Yeah.
Because everybody played it when they were little, but nobody watched soccer or was a fan of any kind of professional soccer when they were younger. So how did you become, I guess, a soccer fan?
Well, the World Cup came in 1994 in the United States, and I'd always been interested in geography, history, sociology, cultural stuff growing up and as a teenager. So World Cup comes, United States in 1994, and I'm seeing all these countries come across and all these different people from across the globe. You know, what do Belgians look like? What do Saudi Arabians look like? And then you keep hearing, oh, it's the number one sport in the world. Well, we don't have access to it in the United States. You know, we're seeing baseball, basketball, football. But before the internet, before large-scale cable television, there's no way to follow it on a mass scale unless you subscribe to something, unless you get overseas papers. So pretty much that came. 1994, the whole summer I watched every match, or at least parts of every match.
Okay.
My parents thought I had gone insane.
Because it was on ESPN, I remember, at the time, and it was the first time there was literally an American outlet, media-wise, for the World Cup, too. And I remember I was, in 94, I was 13, so there you go. And I remember, but I was big into ESPN from, like, my 12 to 13 was kind of when I discovered ESPN. And
they made a significant investment.
Huge.
I think they showed every game. Some were on tape delay, but they showed every game wire to wire.
Right.
Remember 1990 World Cup.
And that was a really weird big deal in 94.
Yeah.
That, like, oh, man, there's soccer on TV. What is that like?
Soccer all day, every day during the summer.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I could watch it being 13. Mm-hmm. I had a chance. I think it was maybe between 7th and 8th grade or something like that.
I know. The stuff you could do when you didn't have a job and responsibilities. You just lay on the couch all day, all summer long. No school, right? Just watch soccer,
go out and, you know, maybe play football or something or go to the beach. I mean, in Cayucas, there's, you know, you go boogie boarding and then you come home and watch soccer. Mm-hmm. And that was maybe a day. So, yeah, for sure. Here with Chris Giovanetti from Cal Poly. And so you kind of became a fan then in 94, and from then on kind of started following?
Well, the sad thing is it kind of came and went in 94 because, like I said, without any internet, without any large-scale access, podcasting, cable, I kind of lost touch a little bit. So now it comes back in 98 in France, and then I'm back on the bandwagon. Now the internet's getting bigger, cable television's blowing up a little bit more.
Right.
So then from there on out, that's where I was really consistent in following it.
Got it, got it. And who's your team? Do you have a team in Europe, a European team or a U.S. team?
I go for Newcastle United. Newcastle. I have...
Because?
8 years ago, I said, I got to pick a team. I can't just do this thing about watching matches. I got to pick a team. And so my brother and I, we did a kind of a scale study of just looked at all the teams in the Premier League at the time and just said, we got to get with somebody. Now,
you did it like
Newcastle.
An econ lesson?
Exactly. No, we looked at where they're from, fan support, down in nicknames, jerseys. So just settled on them, and it's been a rocky marriage ever since.
Newcastle has the striped white and black, like right?
Prison uniform. Yeah, prison black, uniforms. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Good deal.
I also have leanings toward
Barca,
Barcelona, just because the style of play. Once I started reading about the style they play, I said kind of mentally, that's it. That's how you need to do it right there. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So just getting into the cultural aspect and the history of the club, and
sure.
it's kind of hard not to be a fan. So sure. I watched them from afar.
When I was in high school, and you know, goodness knows I wasn't a big fan, but I had a Roberto Carlos jersey that I bought in Madrid. So I was more of a Real Madrid kind of a guy in the
See that scarf hanging
Spain.
Up in the corner right there.
So the scarf is my friend went to Barcelona and got me a scarf. That was what he brought me back. And my other soccer allegiance actually is up here.
What is that? What do you got coming out of the
going deep for this one? San Pedro Sula.
All right. Oh, I was gonna guess. I was gonna try to try sell the Honduras.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows Marathon, but
I could have taken a stab at. I think until I saw the Honduras in the bottom. Us
Marathon and Olympia are the two ones in Honduras, and I get to go there for work sometimes. So I got to go to a Marathon game.
How was it?
It was really cool. It was the CONCACAF Champions League. And they were playing a team from Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. And they were both like the monsters, so it's like the two teams that have the monsters as the.
Who's the team in
Costa Rica?
Saprissa.
They're like blue and red and white. Yeah.
Yeah, they're the purple something.
No, the purple monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the purple monster against the green monster. Yeah, that's what they said, and
sure,
it was
somebody's
really
tweeting you right now saying, and it's this. Listen.
Yeah. Gosh, if somebody did that, I would actually be really excited. So enough soccer talk. Although I could talk some soccer. I lived with a guy who's a huge soccer fan. That's kind of how I got into it when I was about 22 or 23. He's a huge Man U fan. His kid's middle name I think is Beckham. Like he's like,
that's the one thing I couldn't do when we were selecting a team. I couldn't pick the
a really good team.
Chelsea, United, Arsenal, one of those. I couldn't.
Chelsea wasn't great back then though.
It's only been the last 8 years. That's kind of when I started really saying I need to get down to select a team. So
Newcastle's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew it says.
A Wolverhampton fan, and I was always like, why are you a Wolverhampton fan?
It is
fan,
funny when you find like guys who are like Wigan fans. It's like that I want to hear that story. Like
Crystal Palace. Like
yeah, you're either from there or your dad's from there. How did that happen?
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about the long view with the basketball team. Calero's been there for 4 years now.
Yes.
Improved every year, right, as far as record goes.
Yes, 3 years, three more victories every single year.
So they went from
12-19, then 15-15, and 18-15 last year.
Got it. And this year they scheduled themselves pretty tough in the preseason. And
it's probably not any tougher than it's been. It probably looks that way just because of, you see, like, the UCLAs and the Washingtons and the kind of the name schools in the schedule.
I mean, they had St. Mary's last year.
St. Mary's last year. They were at San Diego State 2 years ago, who was number 10 when they played them.
Right, okay.
So it's probably been pretty consistent across the board as far as strength of schedule.
Okay. But this year, they maybe don't have as many chances to have, like, a hugely winning record going into... I mean, they probably will have a winning record, I would imagine, going into... potentially going into the Big West. But it could be around 500, which is not exactly where they've been in other years, right?
Not exactly where they've been, but you have to look at some of the wins they have, especially the UCLA victory.
Which is why I'm saying the strength of schedule is a little bit more. That UCLA game, being there, being like right next to the Cal Poly bench.
That was pretty much the coolest thing I've ever been a part of at Cal Poly.
Yeah.
Tops everything. It tarps the Cal Poly Santa Barbara soccer matches.
Wow, okay.
Edges those out. I mean, just to be on the court, number 11.
Just with the national,
national spotlight. And the way they did it too, being down 18 points with 12 minutes to play.
So I wrote about
this. You were
there. Yeah, I was there, and I was sitting up high with JD, and our argument was whether they were going to keep it in the teens or the 20s. We had that conversation.
As far as the deficit?
As far as the deficit, yeah. Whether it was going to get crazy out of control in the 20s. And that was actually, and I'll admit it, that was what I said. I thought it would get up to the 20s because, you know, UCLA's athleticism was such. And Cal Poly had a drought there at the beginning of the second half where they just couldn't score for the first, like, 5 minutes of that second half. It just didn't seem like they were going to get points or buckets from enough guys. I mean, they kind of hung with them shot for shot in the first half.
Well, there was about that eight-minute stretch there before the comeback started where it was pretty much one-way traffic.
Totally. And, you know, guys were getting dunks and running out. And it seemed like they were starting to finally break down the Cal Poly defense, whatever they were trying to do. And then I think it was that turnover, and Howland talked about it in his post-game press conference. There was a turnover. Bennett was trying to get back, but he was, you know, behind everybody, so he turned and ran and flushed it two-handed. Howland called the timeout, and that was down to 16. Mm-hmm. Royer came out of the timeout, hit a three, down to 13. At what point did you say, like, oh,
When it got to 59-51, when it got to 8 points at
under 10 points.
Yeah, and I'm drawing a blank on how much time was left, but it got to 59-51.
About 7 minutes, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Just because I remember thinking, oh, if they hit a three here, it's completely on. It's all to play for at this point.
Well, and then what was interesting to me was that UCLA scored and brought it, I think, back to 10. And then Cal Poly scored and brought it back to 8. There was a couple, like, back and forths at that point where, you know, despite the charge, you know, UCLA was scoring, but Cal Poly was scoring too. And that was kind of the beginning of that run where they scored on almost every possession down the stretch. So it was pretty much the craziest thing, bit bigger than the soccer games, because I was really impressed with UCSB, the home soccer game this year. I mean, just those energy in those games.
Yeah, those are massive spectacles, and that's something clearly I always circle as far as events on the calendar. Like, I would just attend those games, period, and pay out of my own pocket to come to it, regardless of whether I had any affiliation or not. Yeah, do the whole thing. But this is kind of a, I don't want to say a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's a very special thing to go to, because you're beating
Poly Pavilion.
It's their third game ever at their new place. This is, you know, there's teams that are ranked, but you don't think of them as these kind of cathedrals.
Yeah.
UCLA's had the same looking jerseys forever. So to do it there on national television, the way they did it was, the whole combination was truly special.
Did you grow up a Cal fan?
I had kind of allegiances toward Cal. Uh-huh. My dad kind of had these sticking points about, like, Army, Navy, if we're going for Army, Cal, Stanford, we're going for Cal. But I wasn't really a hardcore Cal fan.
Okay.
When the big game came around, I would probably lean toward Cal, but, you know.
Nothing crazy?
No.
What were your sporting allegiances growing up?
Probably like most kids, I followed in my dad's footsteps. Celtics Likewise. Fan. He was a Celtics fan.
Okay. Yeah.
Giants fan for sure.
Well, I mean, what are you going to be, a Warriors fan or a Kings fan? Come on.
Warriors.
Okay.
Went Warriors. He's from the Bay Area. He was born in San Francisco, so we kind of went Bay Area instead of going out to
SAC. But he was a big Celtics fan.
He's a big Celtics fan, yeah. So yeah, he got on that bandwagon in the 50s, right?
Okay.
No, he was born in San Francisco and grew up in Sonoma County, and so he was a big Bill Russell fan way back in the 50s.
USF. Yeah.
So he followed those guys when he was 9-10 years old, and so when he gets drafted and Casey Jones goes back and all those guys go back there, he just follows suit.
Followed them back there, and so you grew up kind of a Celtics fan then?
Yeah, leaning that way.
Okay.
And I've kind of
and you're young in the 80s, so, you know, the Celtics Lakers rivalry.
Yeah, I always joke, like, I hit that, like, right when my friends' kids who are Giants fans are hitting the Giants stream right now.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
Like, I always tell, like, the young Giants fans, like, it wasn't always like this. It wasn't always.
Yeah, that's hard for me because I'm, you know, I'm born in 81. So, like, the Lakers, I have distinct memories of being 7, 8 years old, 6 years old.
There.
Magic's hook shot, you know, all that. And then, you know, kind of when I started becoming kind of that next level of awareness was, like, the Pig Miller, you know, Sedale 3 days.
It got a little thin right there.
Yeah, I got a little thin with
mid-90s.
And then so then kind of I got to ride the upswing and I was in college.
Jersey on.
And I was in college.
Eddie Jones jersey.
Yeah, Eddie Jones and Cedric Ceballos and you know, Sedale 3 going to his left and pulling up jumpers. But by the time I got to college, the Lakers were back winning.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to really, you know, rub it into everybody else's face that the Lakers were winning at a really good time to do it, which is.
But now the Dodgers. College.
Dodgers have been going downhill since
80s.
I was 7.
Yeah.
And you're a Giants fan, so you can rub that one in for now.
No, there's nothing to rub in. It's just
pathetic.
Giants are going to stay up here, and we're not going to worry about anybody else. It's 2 and 3 years now.
The Giants are enablers, I always said. And they're enablers because 2 years ago when they won it all, I think if the Giants wouldn't have done it with such a kind of a put-together payroll cobbled together.
You can say it.
Yeah, I mean, really, it was what it was. And I feel like the Dodgers then said, oh, well, if the Giants can get away with it, all we have to compete with is the Giants. Mm-hmm. And we should be able to compete with the Giants by cobbling together our own group. And they just don't do it as well.
Except that pitching staff was not cobbled. It wasn't like they just picked up a bunch of cast-offs. And that was...
But the impression for everybody is that they are cobbled together. And so when they're trying to sell the Dodgers product to the Dodger fans,
it's
these guys, you know, we can compete in our division. That's all you need to do. You get in the playoffs, you make a run, you're good. And they did for a couple of years there. But it was always the Giants who I felt like kind of enabled them by winning the championship. Not only did they win a championship, but they also enabled the Dodgers for a year or two. And a year and a half later, you know, Frank McCourt got kind of caught up in that enabling, because that's what he was. I mean, that's what he was doing. He was just trying to kind of keep up just barely enough, whatever I have to do.
Just enough to slide into the playoffs. Yeah,
exactly.
But I feel with LA, and this might be a stereotypical thing, like I feel there needs to be some substance and some flash. And
oh, yeah.
You have to win. You have to do it kind of in style.
I've written this about the Lakers. It's worse for them to be irrelevant than it is for them to be bad.
Yes.
So this year, if they're bad, they're at least still relevant.
Yes.
They have stars that are failing. That's a storyline. People will go and see, can Steve Nash turn it around once he comes back? They'll see, can Pau Gasol, you know, they'll go to boo Pau Gasol because Pau Gasol is a star. They wouldn't go to boo, is it Ryan Anderson who they're thinking about trading for? Josh Smith, they would though. So that's like a thought for, I'm sure, Mitch Kupchak or whoever makes those trades is, you know, you got to have those stars in place.
People it's have options. They're not always... Yeah, if you're
it's why they got Meta World Peace instead of Trevor Ariza. I feel like that's a major factor in that, because Meta or Ron Artest at the time is a star. He's a,
for a better or worse, he's a name guy.
Even though he was probably worse for that team overall. And
I need to address one thing while we're talking about Meta World Peace.
Yeah.
Am I the only person who just calls him Ron Artest? His name is Ron Artest. Who changes their name in their early 30s?
I call him Ron sometimes. just Ron. Yeah. Who changes their name? Ron Artest and World Be Free.
Well, unless you're trying to go into hiding from the mob, who else changes their name? World Be Free.
World Be Free was somebody, yeah.
I think it's hysterical. Like, I'll just listen to play-by-play, like when I'm getting ready in the morning, like the Sports Center cobbled together play-by-play from last night. I think it's hysterical. They'll say, you know, rebound, Meta.
And if you watch, I'll tell you a funny story. When you watch and I don't have the Lakers channel. We don't have DirecTV or cable here. But I went to my parents' house and I watched a replay of the Laker game in Spanish. And there's nothing nothing finer than a good Spanish replay.
Uh-huh.
And they don't call him World Peace. They call him Meta. You know, so when he's about
put
to shoot a three,
on it.
It's just Meta. Oh, or Meta, good. You know, like it's a just Meta. That's all they say over to, you know,
Meta.
Over to Meta. You know, they just call him Meta. First name basis, like a soccer player.
Yeah.
Because essentially, when you change your name to Meta World Peace, you may as well be a one-name soccer player.
I'll be screaming at the radio in the morning, his name is Ron Artest. His name is Ron Artest. And my girlfriend would be like, what are you yelling about? What's going on? His name is Ron Artest.
Right. One thing that I think Cal Poly fans really like about, kind of switching back to Cal Poly, one thing I think they really like about or have a good impression for Joe Calero for is kind of attention to detail and being pretty meticulous with kind of how things work, timing of practice, timing of things. It seems like his guys are lockstep when he's got them on the floor, when he's practicing with them, whatever. Is that something that filters down to you as somebody who's essentially working with and for?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I kind of look at it as its own little, for lack of a better word, corporation, where to be successful, you need to have a good publicity arm. You need to have a good healthcare for your employees. You need to have all these things in place. And it's one of the things I enjoy about working with the program is everybody is kind of part of one team, whether you're a player or assistant coach or myself, everybody has a responsibility to the program to make it successful.
Like a pretty well-defined role, it seems
exactly.
Like.
And, there's certain things expected of players, there's certain things expected of, you know, myself or our trainer.
Sure. Got it. It seems like the team in general, one thing that I wrote about a couple weeks ago after the Fresno State loss, they're pretty mature. Like they seem like they're like pretty mature guys after, you know, busting their butt for 40 minutes and losing that game to Fresno State, that there was really all, you know, just about Fresno State making shots. I mean, they did everything that their coach asked them to do. And they seemed like not okay with losing, but okay with the fact that like they did everything they were, or a lot of what they were supposed to do. And were able to just ask questions with, or answer questions with a level of maturity after losses. And I've seen that, you know, last year with Amari Furman, you know, throughout whoever I talk to, David Hansen, you know, anybody who comes through the program, it seems like has that level of kind of being able to stand up. Chris Eversley after the St. Mary's game, you know, was trying to tell me about why it was going to be good for his team, you know, to come in here and play this game, even if they lost. And, how do you get a guy who's 20 years old to, you know, 21 years old, something like that, to be like that? And I, the more I think about it, the more these are Calero guys. These are guys who are able to verbalize what Joe's line is. I mean, right? I mean,
well, they're towing the line. Yeah, specifically selected to succeed at Cal Poly. And Cal Poly and this level has a certain player they need to go after, whether it's athletically and academically. There's a certain combination he's looking for. Attitude-wise, exactly. And once they get inside the program, there's a certain level of focus that you're expected to maintain. It's kind of that turning pro mindset of you need to... Yeah. Operate as a professional, whether it's taking care of your body and your level of focus and motivation.
Right.
Keep everything high.
Right. And like, even on the court, I mean, you rarely see guys get like, since Calero's like first year, I want to say, you rarely see guys get like frustrated on the court, really. I mean, there's frustration sometimes, but you don't even like outwardly as a fan, you can sometimes not even tell that they're frustrated. And to compete at such a high level, I think that's something that's important, right? And obviously, well, something that Joe values.
Yeah, I think that we're talking about. I think there's also a self-policing aspect.
Yeah.
Where if everybody's buying in, there's nobody who's going to be lax. Nobody's going to want to let their teammates down. And once everybody's kind of playing on that level, I think it just kind of sinks into their core.
How impressed are you with Brian Bennett? Maturity-wise and
I think
and
I'm
play-wise.
Like every other fan out there who's extremely impressed.
Yeah.
There were hints that he was going to be the impact big man. Clearly, he's got a great physical body. He's 6'9".
I mean, at 6'9", he was wearing out the Ware twins.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, he was even holding his own against a
strong
big old
moves
Josh
around
Smith.
The basket, yeah. Pretty agile.
Yeah. Can make a 17-footer that he's shown in the last few games,
yeah.
Even that guys are going to have to step out and guard, you know, when he kind of pops out. He's shooting, you know, 60% some games.
Yeah.
You know, he's high percentage guy. How important is that for Cal Poly to get a lot out of him continually? Do you think he's maybe like one of
I think at the moment it's important because, Joe's got three guys, Coach Calero's got three guys who are redshirting this year, three big guys. So as many miles as they can get out of Brian Bennett this year with Zach Gordon backing him up, because they are fairly thin in the post area.
Right, and those three big guys are Zach Allman from Mission and mm-hmm.
Joshua Hall from Washington State.
Right, and then was there the third big guy who's redshirting?
We have another guard that's redshirting too, so it's two big guys.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. I thought I was forgetting somebody there for a second.
I know, I'm not doing my job.
You're tricking me. One other guy I want to talk about, Chris Eversley. I mean, he's kind of far and away, it looks like, going to be the leading scorer on this team. He's going to be kind of offensively the guy mm-hmm. that the team, you know, works around. I don't think that's hard to say.
Yeah.
What impresses you most about him as you're around him on a daily basis, I guess?
It's probably around him on a daily basis.
Yeah.
His attitude's amazing. Like, I'm amazed at his attitude. It's always upbeat. It's what we were talking about a couple minutes ago.
Yeah.
Totally focused, always happy, always in a good mood, always ready to do an interview, always ready to smile into the camera. Totally likable guy. And that's just not me saying it. I'm trying to echo stuff people say on the streets,
yeah.
Fans, other
yeah.
Students.
I see it, sure.
Great guy to be around.
Sure.
And you can just see he enjoys what he's doing at all times. Yeah, he's very gregarious.
He's happy and he has like an awareness.
He's warm. He's welcome. Exactly. Awareness
like
is a good word.
Right. He's,
yeah.
He's not like, he's going to make eye contact with you. He's going to talk to you if you want to talk to him.
Exactly.
Really easy to approach, really mm-hmm. easy to talk to, for sure. I agree. And on top of that, you know, it looks like he's going to average... You know,
could be a double this year.
Yeah, I mean, as much as any Cal Poly player has averaged in a while, I feel like. What was the leading score last year? Do you know off the top of your head?
I want to say David Hansen finished around 11.
Yeah.
It was pretty balanced. The top three
right.
guys, and Eversley came on
like
the
11
end.
To 8. somewhere in there was like,
yeah,
the
we
top.
Had four guys about 11 to 8.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like this year, Eversley, if he doesn't get 15, I'll be surprised per game. I mean,
that seems to be a consistent number because there'll right. be
he's getting
a couple opponents coming up here where he'll be able. Well, he had 25 against St. Mary, so the sky's the limit there.
And he had 15 and 10 against UCLA.
15 against UCLA. He had a decent game at TCU. So
right, yeah. Even with a really bad shooting game at TCU.
Yeah.
He had decent.
And it's fun. It's going to be fun to see where he goes this year and then as he gets to a senior, kind of how the whole thing unfolds.
Right. Barquette kind of makes the bold prediction that he might get like conference MVP at some point in the next 2 years. That's Tom's throwing it out there prediction.
I don't feel it's out of, he's got some competition.
Sure.
For sure. But I don't think it's that nutty of a prediction. I think it's a very realistic in Tom's defense, very realistic prediction.
What it's going to take, I think, is Cal Poly getting like a top one or two seed in the conference and maybe going to the tournament. I don't know. Is it voted on before the tournament?
It is. It comes out the week of the tournament, so a couple days before the tournament starts. Okay, so that's not factored
in. So it's just regular season. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, if they get the top one or two seeds in a season like this, where they're only expecting, where they were picked preseason to get what, seventh?
Yeah, and that's a pretty consistent team. The MVP and the first team is usually coming out of those
top two to four teams. Yeah, right. That's kind of my thought too. What's something most people don't know about the Cal Poly team? How they travel or how they act? You know, how they operate when they're on the road. It seems like the guys like to have a good time, but what's like a something that most people don't know about the way they operate?
I think it's just an overall aspect of how things go. Because I think fans, most of them probably just come to the games. They think, well, there's a team on the floor,
right?
But there's a whole lot of building aspect to exactly. how things get there. Like this week, for instance, we'll play a game Saturday night at 7 o'clock. 10 o'clock Sunday morning, we're on the bus. We're going to Nevada. That's a 7-hour bus ride.
So you're taking the bus.
Taking a bus to Nevada.
On the bus.
So we'll get there.
Torino.
We'll get there about 5 or 6, get a quick bite to eat, and then we'll head to the Lawler Event Center where Nevada plays and practice. Probably get done around 9 or 10 at night. We'll get another bite to eat, go back to the hotel. Monday morning, we'll get up. We'll have breakfast. We'll probably practice, I think, mid-morning. Little break in the afternoon. Team event Monday night, Tuesday morning, wake up, breakfast, shoot around.
When you say team event, back up real quick, like team event, like everybody's getting together to eat or do something fun.
They'll send the guys to the movies like last year in Chicago, we played DePaul. We got some time just walking up and down Michigan Avenue. Nice relaxing time for the guys. Right.
Joe had mentioned Universal before the UCLA game. Did you guys get a chance to do that?
Went to the Universal City Walk. We didn't go to Universal Studios.
Okay.
So that was it was a fun event.
Right.
So when we go on the road, there are, because we usually do play in these kind of major cities, Seattle, Chicago's, LA's. And so there is usually a couple hours of a chance to get a taste of what's going on locally, which is always fun.
And when you guys have like a player from a place like Chris Eversley last year in Chicago, or I would imagine when you go to Washington, Joe's kind of the...
Jamal Johnson, his whole family drove out from San Antonio.
When you're at TCU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah. And I would imagine when you go to Seattle, you're playing them in Seattle, right? That's where Washington
is. In Seattle, but it's not just the players like Josh Hall. It's
Joe Calero.
Coach Calero's from up there. Yeah. Assistant coach Mitch Freeman's from up there. Director of operations Mitch Reeves is from up there. So it's a big Seattle-Washington State connection.
You're going to have plenty to do.
Yeah, even if I had family going, they wouldn't be able to get a ticket. Be taken.
So real quick, I wanted to just kind of hit the men's soccer team before we get out. I know that we talked a little bit about it, we alluded to it, and you're a big soccer fan, but I went to that UCSB game this year at Cal Poly, and it was the first one of them that I've been to. And I got there, you know, a couple hours before the game, and fans are already starting to file in. An hour before the game, over half of Spanos is full. I mean, it's a different environment than you're going to find for any sport, including football.
It's ridiculously unique to college athletics. And there's really nothing like it in the college game.
And to
this game. And it's one marquee matchup between two rivals. And I'll tell you a quick story. This is all you need to know about how fun the atmosphere is and how enjoyable it is and how unique it is. I've been telling my parents for years now, Cal Poly Santa Barbara, it's ridiculous. It's growing every single year. It's on national television. The fans are into it.
Right.
People are traveling for this game. People mark it on their calendars. So this year, my mom said, I want to come to a game. So they were going to come down to a Cal Poly football game anyway. We just happened to be playing in Santa Barbara the night before.
Okay.
So she's like, I want to come down. And my dad's just kind of meat and potatoes, baseball, football,
basketball
guy. Yeah. Uh-huh. He's like, yeah, no, I don't know. I'm good.
Uh-huh.
my mom goes, well, I'm going with Chris down to Santa Barbara anyway. And I said, you're not going because I'm not going to put you in the stands by yourself.
Not 65-year-old
woman. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you're not wearing green.
Yeah. Don't wear colors. Yeah. So finally, my dad relented and my brother came down as well. So they sat in the stands and they saw that game. It's one more memorable. These games always seem to get ratcheted up every single year just when you think it can't go to another level.
The stadiums are full.
To another level.
Every game. Yeah. Yeah.
This year, would they finish on like 13,400, 13,008? I forgot the number.
At UCSB.
Yeah, now like the sixth largest crowd in the regular season history of college soccer.
And Cal Poly is still tied for what, 10th or 11th? Because they just keep filling up
Spanos. Yeah, we can only max out
11,
yeah,
10, sell out. 1075.
I think it's now the 11th largest crowd. Right. But it's gotten so quick. Like these numbers start running together. And
right.
Like I'm losing track of where it ranks stat-wise. But you also throw out these numbers. Oh, they got 13,000 for a college soccer game?
Right.
Most programs would be happy if they could get 1,000.
Average
1,000. Just get 1,000.
Even in a good conference, right? I mean, even in like...
I'm guessing...
Pac-10 or Pac-12,
excuse me. Cal-Stanford, I don't think they're getting more than 1,500, maybe 2,000.
Right. UCLA-USC.
USC doesn't have it, but
UCLA.
I'm thinking back,
whoever
he's like...
they're playing.
Maybe
that's like right. USC doesn't have men's soccer.
No, either. Maybe like a Duke, Carolina, a Wake Forest, Carolina. Some of the rivals back, Maryland, Maryland, Georgetown. Those types of games. Clemson, South Carolina. I can't imagine they would get more than 3,000 or 4,000. And so the fact that we can just go 11,000, 10,000, 13,000,
and just mark it on the calendar.
Yeah,
I mean, it's going to be that way as long as
and it's gotten to the point where it's just a guaranteed.
Like
we'll sell out our place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just
we need to schedule and we'll sell out.
There were guys like, there had to be, I'm estimating 500 to 1,000 people who stood outside of Spanos.
Yeah, it's really not a true attendance figure. We can only count how many
people
we can
are
sit
inside the gate.
Yeah, and that's kind of how we knew how big it was going to be in 2007.
Uh-huh.
Paul Holliher, the head coach, really kind of starts a grassroots promotion to, he wants to break Cal Poly's own attendance record.
Right.
Well, we get like, I think it was 7,800 for that game or 7,300. So it far exceeds what anybody thought it could be.
Right.
Next year, Fox Soccer Channel comes to town. It's sellout, 11,000, max the whole place out.
Huge.
People are on the building, next to the field, on the scaffolding, hanging out there.
That's what I'm saying on that fire escape.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the best seat in the house.
Exactly. There's people outside the stadium on like kind of the hill that you can see from the press box off the left-hand side.
You don't want to know this, but there were people climbing fences I saw. I mean, there were people just doing whatever they could to get in there.
No, I can imagine. That's what I'm saying. It's not a true attendance figure because...
Yeah, I mean, there had to be at least another 1,000 people. 500,
I think
500 to 1,000 people.
Safe estimate, yeah.
Students who thought they could just walk down.
Yeah.
Like freshmen who thought they could just walk down and they were incorrect. And it seems to be getting Cal Poly at least noticed more. Like that game, I feel like, or those two games, I guess, get Cal Poly... probably more recruiting buzz or as much recruiting buzz.
Oh, that's
buzz,
the game that
like.
The coaching staff brings recruits to.
Absolutely.
I think almost every Cal Poly, not almost every, but a number of them will say, that's when I knew I wanted to come to Cal Poly. Like Chris Gashin said, that's when I knew. Mackenzie Pridham, the leading scorer this year, said, I came to that game in, I think, 08. That's when I knew I wanted to come to
Done.
Cal Poly. Yeah.
Done.
Done.
Yeah.
Done.
And this year, I don't know how much you're allowed to talk about any recruits, but a lot of there's a recruiting website, I think topdoorsoccer.com or something like that, lists, and I'm thinking of his last name, it starts with a D and a H, but anyway, there's a top 25 recruit that has, according to that website, and I don't know if it's official with you guys or whatever, but who's committed to Cal Poly. I mean, it seems to be making a big difference, right? I mean,
it can only help. I mean, that's, I think if you're Duke, Carolina for men's basketball, that's the game you put your recruits to. Any of that big, anything you can do to sell that program on that kind of crazy national level.
Right. And it seems like Holliher is using it and building his program based on that.
Yeah.
What do you think about the Barcelona style that those guys are playing now, that the men are playing, right? Holliher went to Barcelona and he, right?
Yeah, to backtrack, Cal Poly didn't have such a great year last year in the offseason.
It was defensive. Like they scored like less goals than games they played or very, like it was almost exactly equal.
Well, we had the greatest defensive season in program history. Unfortunately, it coincided with probably the worst offensive season in program history. So Coach Holliher goes to FC Barcelona. He gets kind of an all-access tour of the facility. He gets to pick coaches' brains. He gets to see how the youth team plays. He gets to see all the facilities. So he comes back and wants to implement more of a passing game, keep the ball on the deck, work it a little bit more. And I it's hard to argue with the results this year. I mean, had the a guy scored more than 10 goals for the first time since, I want to say, 1996.
Yeah.
They were competitive in every match. Made the semifinals of the conference tournament, so got back in the mix.
And what I love about soccer is that, you know, Hollaher, whoever, talks about, you know, a much more pleasing style. I love, like,
it's more pleasing to the
aesthetically
eye.
Aesthetically pleasing. Yeah. And I love that about soccer, that that's how, like, coaches and people in the know, like, describe it. It's this kind of less concrete, kind of abstract, like, ooh, it's more pleasing to the eye. But there are concrete things that they're doing within that that make that happen. But how it gets described to the fan is like, ooh, it's, you know, more aesthetically pleasing, or, you know, there's a lot more ball control.
Yeah, sets it apart from other... There is a very... romanticized,
totally
artistic, how you would describe a great painting to it.
Yeah, I always get a kick out of that.
Which is fun. It's fun to debate those points.
Being somebody who, you know, didn't grow up a soccer fan and still considers myself kind of a, I guess, a skeptical soccer fan. You know, when I see like, you know, Central and South American teams, you know, not get touched and go down and grab their legs. And
you're still cynical, aren't you?
There was a kid on my, like, when I was like 11, there was a kid on my soccer team who used to do that for fun. And I always was like, what's he doing? But he had like this understanding of how other people play soccer, and that was how they did it. And he would go down and grab his leg, and the ref would call a foul, and he'd kind of slowly get up and kind of smile at you. And
well, it's interesting how these kind of cultural things work themselves into sports, where going down softly or play acting or however you want to describe it is not something that we in America, subscribe to as being how you go about your business and playing sports versus in South America per se. They see it as kind of a street game, kind of a idealistically you're a player, you're trying to get one over, you're trying to con. It's part of how you go about playing the game.
And there's nothing wrong with it. Nobody looks down on it.
Nobody looks down on it, but it's just
part of what it is.
It's part of what it is. It's part of how you play the game, just like anything else would be any other sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me something fun about the two other sports you cover. Or you cover? What's the approach you are assigned to?
Work with.
Yeah. Tell me something fun about each of the women's tennis and softball, and then I know you're on.
College tennis is fun because it's not. I think people see tennis and they'll watch like Wimbledon or the U.S. Open. It's very reserved, and it's very, especially like Wimbledon, very prim and proper. People bow to the royal box when they go into the stadium. College tennis is fun. It's more wide open. People are cheering. They're talking during points. It's not, especially the men's game. It's guys are pumped up on the court. They're pumping fists. They're psyching themselves up. The fans are going nuts in the stands.
There's actually like a nice set of stands next to the tennis.
Yeah, it's a good facility.
Yeah, I mean, there's like not just benches, but it seems like there's seats out there.
There's fold down seating. You can watch five matches at once.
Yeah. And would you recommend that people like come and bring like a folding chair to go and like around the other sides when?
Well, there's a big kind of grassy knoll off to the back of the
So a towel.
Yeah, the stadium, so they can just come out and hang out and watch. You know, a guy like Andre Dome, who's nationally ranked, who's one of the better players in America,
has done really well recently, right?
Yeah,
great. And how about softball?
Softball's fun. They're going to be back on the rise this
year. And you've been doing softball
since 2007. That's the one sport I've worked with consistently since I got here. So they won the conference title in 2007 and 2009, made some waves in the NCAA tournament in 2009.
Did they win some games?
Yeah, they won some games, got to the final of the Stanford Regional.
Okay. Wow.
Two games away from making the Super Regional, 41 wins, best year in
which is unusual. And I wrote about this today in regards to the football team. There are teams who have done really well and made tournaments. Not the men's basketball team yet. But the football team has made the NCAA tournament.
Year in, year out, there's a number of teams playing on national
volleyball
levels.
Has done it before.
Volleyball got to number 10 in the nation at one point. I used to work with volleyball. Made the round of 16 in the NCAA tournament in 2007.
But I really feel like there are a few teams and some of the higher profile squads like football, men's basketball, women's basketball even, who are kind of on the verge of like getting to a point where they can do something crazy. I mean, the UCLA win is something that's crazy right now, but like do something, and when I say crazy, I guess you can kind of infer what I mean by that. Get to a tournament, like win a game, mm-hmm. do something, you know, make it to an NCAA tournament for the men's basketball team, or get to like the quarter or semifinals yeah. if you're the football team. They're like right there. There's so many of those programs that are just kind of men's soccer. Yeah. Men's soccer. I mean, the difference in national profile of UCSB versus Cal Poly. Even though the two programs right now, like talent-wise, obviously, they're not that much different. UCSB is probably still looked at as like the more talented, better soccer school to go to.
Just because of national championship.
There you go. They broke through, right? They won mm-hmm. some games in the NCAA. They won their conference.
Championship as an unseeded team in 06.
Yeah. Right, right. And so all of a sudden now, let's think of them a lot differently. So many of these programs are at that precipice, including like football. I mean, football was a coin flip last week.
Came down the wire.
State. I mean, it's 2 points. The basketball team has been, you know, kind of knocking on the door, mm-hmm. on the door. It's something that I see kind of. There's this like constant knocking on the door for a fan, and
are you asking which program's going to break through next?
Well, what do you think?
I think you have to look at each sport individually. Sure. And what they can do kind of within their own realm. Probably the best thing for Cal Poly on a national level will be the men's basketball team making the NCAA tournament, just how that tournament's viewed and how it's looked at.
Sure.
There's other sports like men's soccer where because the scoring's at a premium and at a minimum, it's probably easier to win the NCAA men's soccer tournament than...
Like randomly without a lot of buildup,
You're still going to get... your usual suspects are always in and around the final four, the college
UCLA,
cup, the NCAA
ACC
tournament.
Teams.
Yeah, Maryland's there.
UCLA and Pac-12.
Exactly.
ACC and Pac-12.
Yeah. But because the scoring is such a premium, it would probably be easier for the men's soccer team to advance sure. consistently on a national level. And you look at a sport like softball, where it's such a pitching-heavy sport.
You get a good pitcher or three.
And exactly. You need one good pitcher, you need a couple sticks, and you're really competitive all of a sudden. We saw that with Cal Poly a couple years ago. They had the pitcher of the year in the conference. She won 28 games.
The baseball team's another one of these teams, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they have like these flashes of being really awesome at mm-hmm. times, and you just want them to like, you know, you want to have like something to hang your hat on with like a postseason
yeah.
something. And I know,
but baseball's another sport too where guys who are really good are only going to stick around for 3 years just because the money to be made at the professional level is. So plentiful.
Sure,
so
sure.
You kind of you don't work in a 4 year cycle or a 1 year cycle. You work within these kind of, I think, 3 year cycles.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So
each sport kind of has a different sphere and probably how it needs to be looked at.
Right.
The success needs to be measured.
Sure. We need to cover more spring sports this year. That's a goal that I have for fansmanship. Chris, any parting words for Cal Poly fans out there, anything people
come
need to
out
know about,
support
anything?
Your Mustangs. Yeah. It's going to be a fun year. It's already been a fun year with the men's soccer team, the football team, women's basketball team is doing well. Men's basketball team home twice the next week.
Okay, against Menlo tomorrow.
Menlo, Eastern New Mexico next Friday, and then they'll be back January 3rd and 5th. Conference starts, and they'll have Long Beach and Irvine right out of the gate.
They always get Long Beach at home right out of the gate before the students get back.
Get some tricky draw. We get some tricky draws to start conference. Last year, I think we had Santa Barbara and Long Beach to start out of the chute
in like December.
They'll open up at Riverside on the 29th of December.
Okay.
So they'll get that game out of the way, and then the first weekend back home is Long Beach and Irvine. Probably, I think most people would estimate those are two of the top three teams.
Yeah, Irvine almost beat UCLA, and Long Beach is.
Long Beach people saw in the tournament last
Long
year.
Beach that, is Long Beach.
Yeah.
You know,
a number of good players back from last year's team. So.
Yeah, and Hawaii's in the conference again.
Hawaii's back in the conference. We'll make that trip. I think they're out here about January 17th, January 19th, and then we'll go there first week of March.
That'll be nice.
You asked me what people want to know about traveling. It's usually not all it's cracked up to be. Hawaii will be in for about 36 hours.
Wow.
We play at Northridge on Thursday night. We'll fly Friday morning.
Okay.
To Honolulu, we'll get there, we'll practice Saturday morning, we'll shoot around, game Saturday night, back on the plane Sunday morning. So roughly about a 48-hour window to get in and out of Honolulu.
Hawaii has to be so stoked to be in the Big West. And I say that because...
To make a trip every other weekend to the West Coast?
Well, yeah, but...
Better than what they were doing.
God, they were going to like Louisiana Tech or mm-hmm. something, right? I mean, they were in conference.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. Every year they're flying to... The central time zone, not even the mountain time zone.
Yeah.
And the mountain time zone too, and the western. And
what's it, about 4 or 5 hours from Honolulu to the mainland?
How compacted is the Big West? I mean, you guys don't ever have to fly within conference except for the Hawaii, right?
Yeah, before Yeah, before Hawaii joined, we is the only conference in America where everybody was contained in one state.
So they can just log that trip to LAX. I mean, for probably maybe all of their trips except for the Davis and UOP trip, which they go to SFO. I mean, that must be just so much easier travel wise.
I would imagine it's for them. The sticking point is going to be with Davis, but they'll just probably fly into Sacramento and fly out. Should be pretty, because Pacific's leaving the conference.
Oh,
at the end of this year.
They are. Okay, I didn't know that.
At the end of this year, we'll have one NorCal team.
Huh. And then is Boise their travel partner? Is it who's Davis?
I don't know how it's going to shake out in the coming years.
Interesting.
But Boise will be in next year, and San Diego State will be in, and then Pacific will be out.
Got to
the West Coast.
Okay, I didn't realize Pacific was going out.
Yeah, this is their last year.
You know
year.
What though? That kind of makes sense. They're a private school, right? I mean that's not. I mean, just the profile of the school is matching with the West Coast probably.
And there's a number of teams in the Bay Area they'll play.
Yeah,
the West Coast is a pretty Mary's compact and, conference. Yeah,
and
three
USF.
Teams in LA. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Four in the Bay Area now.
Who else besides St. Mary's and USF?
Santa Clara.
Oh yeah, yeah. Who Cal Poly goes and plays in a couple Tuesdays or Mondays?
We will be there a week from a Monday.
Yeah, there you go. The Broncos.
Broncos, and then we'll hit Washington to close in on conference December 20th, right before Christmas.
Right before Christmas. Yeah. Chris Giovannetti, I really appreciate you joining us on the podcast, and hopefully we'll have you again sometime soon.
Thanks for having me, Owen.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com. Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out.